Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Solutions for the Underaffiliated, the radio show for frustrated people to discover solutions to fix this mess. We're going to be talking about food policy today, but first, it's March 9th, and that means it's National Proofreading Day, so check your work, and it'll just come out better. Also, check out www.underaffiliated.com, where all of our shows reside. Today we have Gina Smith, who is the Council Coordinator for the Asheville-Buncombe County Food Policy. And we're very excited to have you here, Gina, so welcome. And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thanks for having me. And also, thanks for letting us know that today is National Proofreading Day. I love that. I'm actually an editor and a writer, in addition to being the coordinator for the Asheville-Buncombe Food Policy Council. And so I appreciate proofreading. So thanks for having me.
So what's going on in your world?
With the Food Policy Council, things are very busy. We're working on...
Whoa. What is the Food Policy Council? What do you guys do?
The Food Policy Council was actually established in 2011, so it's been around for a while. It was created by community members and activists and just a group of people who were concerned about the situation with our food system here in Buncombe County. I mean, there's this dichotomy here, right? Because we're quote-unquote foodtopia. We have this fantastic restaurant scene, but also a really high rate of food insecurity. A lot of folks don't have reliable access to food. So that's why the council was formed. And
what are some of the initiatives you have, or the mission, or kind of, you're going to pick two or three things, you say we do this, what would those kind of things be?
Yeah, well, we're mainly working to address that situation, make sure there's food access for everyone, and make sure we have a strong food system here in Buncombe County, a sovereign food system that everybody can feed themselves and can grow food if they want to grow food for themselves and their community.
Let's talk a minute about some of the things that I saw on your website. So there's food security and food reparations. Mm-hmm. There's emergency food preparedness was another thing. Yeah, how would you describe to someone who you're working with what, for example, food reparations means? Mm-hmm. And how important is that in your whole list of things you're working on?
Yeah. So I'll back up a little bit and cover all those. We have a working group model. So we have a policy mobilization hub that meets once a month. And also we have working groups. And anybody in the community can step up and form a working group around an issue that they see that they want to address. And currently the working groups that we have are the Neighborhood Emergency Food Preparedness Group, and I'll talk more about that. Also, food waste reduction is an area that we're working in a lot right now in partnership with WNC and supporting WNC Food Waste Solutions, which is a coalition of organizations and individuals. Let's see, what have I mentioned? Food security reparations. Yeah, so that's actually a new group that we started it a couple years ago, and it was meant to partner with the Joint Reparations Commission, the Buncombe County and City of Asheville Reparations Commission, to keep food security as part of the conversation. And that's based on research and storytelling sessions that were done several years ago with folks in some legacy neighborhoods and historically Black communities and marginalized communities here in Asheville that revealed that the city's urban renewal policies severely impacted the food security. Those communities were food secure until urban renewal completely destroyed that. And so this group is addressing that and keeping that part of the bigger reparations conversation.
I think that's the kind of thing that the average listener would be completely unaware of.
Before urban renewal policies were enacted, and I will say that the Asheville metropolitan area had one of the biggest urban renewal removals of people in the entire Southeast. So families were uprooted from their homes and moved into public housing and other, you know, other situations. And so when that happened, these communities who had really strong, maybe they weren't wealthy money-wise, but they were very food secure. They had gardens, they had little community markets, they shared their food, like everybody had enough to eat. That's what all these listening sessions revealed and talking to community members. So when people were uprooted and moved to public housing where they didn't have gardens, often weren't allowed to grow food. People who tried to grow food, there were instances where people reported that they had their gardens sprayed with herbicides, so because they weren't allowed to have them. when that happened, people not only lost their ability to grow their own food, they lost their little markets, their restaurants, but they also lost that knowledge, that generational knowledge of how to grow food, how to preserve food. And so it left people sort of stranded.
When did that, what is the time period that that took place, the urban renewal?
So urban renewal was happening around here in the 60s and early 70s, I believe.
So that's about a generation, is right.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a lot of information about that. The City of Asheville's website has a lot of information about urban renewal. But so that's specifically what this Food Security Reparations Coalition is trying to address, is that, and to keep that part of the conversation as this commission is looking at ways to...
So how do they work? Because that seems like it's community action.
Yeah.
So organizing...
The coalition itself meets monthly. There's a coordinator, Phyllis Utley, who maintains communication with the commission members. And we actually have some of the commission members who are part of our coalition. And there are representatives from historically black neighborhoods who are part of this coalition, community organizations. It's a big group of people. And we just keep in touch with each other through these monthly meetings. We keep updated and just trying to see where we can plug in and take action.
Yeah, what does success look like from doing this?
Well, at this point, success looks like keeping in touch with what the commission is doing and seeing how we can plug in. We haven't actually been able to take any action yet because the commission, if you keep up with what's going on with the reparations movement here in Buncombe County, it's been a long process of getting the commission established, and it's just now starting to get rolling, making recommendations and that kind of thing. And there's lots of work with keeping up with what the focus groups, there's a health and wellness focus group, an economic focus group, and to see where we can act and how we can help.
One of the things that strikes me is you have this group that's focusing on food reparations, on mm-hmm. one hand growing food, and then there's also a concern you have, which is food waste.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about what you're doing in the food waste area.
Yeah, so that's actually a big area of work for us right now. It has been for a long time. So the Food Policy Council actually held the first Food Waste Solutions Summit here in Buncombe County in 2017. And then from there, a group started to grow, like coalesce after that original event. We held another event in 2019, and from there we really had a solid group that's called WNC Food Waste Solutions now. And so we still support that group and work with that group, and that group is very active. We're planning a third summit, and we do every year is Food Waste Reduction Month. We have a big campaign to help folks understand what food waste is, how to reduce food waste in their homes and in the community. And then we have a new event that happened first time last year and is happening this year on April 30th called Taste It, Don't Waste It Chef's Challenge, where we have chefs come in and cook with food that would otherwise be thrown away, and they make fantastic dishes, and the public's invited to come in and taste everything and vote for their favorite.
So April is right around the corner.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit more about that, because what is food waste? Mm-hmm. What are the objectives of the group?
Yes. Food waste happens in your home. Anybody can start right in your own home, in your own kitchen, in reducing food waste. It's when you go to the grocery store and you buy too much, and you get two packages of strawberries because they're on sale, and one of them just rots in the back of the fridge, and you dump it in the trash. That's food waste. Food waste also happens at a commercial level. That's actually huge. Buncombe County released in their waste report last year that 28.5% of the commercial waste stream is uneaten food.
So when you only need two or three packages of strawberries, you have to buy the whole case, and as the wholesaler.
Yeah. Yes. So yeah.
Yeah. Could you explain when you say commercial?
Mm-hmm. That's restaurants, and our restaurants, I will say, they work really hard to avoid food waste. All of them do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's part of their bottom line, but also because they care. Most of our restaurants care about the environment and the community. Also, like grocers, the grocery stores, any business that's working with food. There's
school cafeterias.
Oh, yeah, don't get me started. And then also it happens on the farm too. Like if farmers don't have a way, if they have a crop, there's a whole system involved in this. So grocery stores have aesthetics that they want things to look a certain way. So they want your apples to be perfectly red and beautiful. And if they're not, they won't buy them. And so if a farmer has a crop that is blemished, like there's a hailstorm and their squash get little pock marks on them and the grocers won't buy them, all of that food, like what are they going to do with it? Sometimes they can find places to take it. They can donate it to MANA. If not, sometimes it sits in the field and rots. So,
yeah. So it's a beauty contest for food. We're not really worried about nutrition. We're worried about how it looks.
And that's another way. Individuals, if you see blemished food, it's perfectly good. If you see something with a nick on it at the supermarket, you can buy that. You can buy that potato with a nick on it. It's usually, they're fine. If they're for sale, they're okay. But our perception is it has to be perfect. And so the grocery stores are catering to that, and they want to give us what we think we need.
Part of the name of your organization is Policy Council. Mm-hmm. Explain a little bit about how you impact policy and what, like, an example is of doing that.
Yeah, so I guess a really big example for our Food Policy Council is the relationship we have with the city of Asheville, which started early on in our existence. We started working with the city and created the city's, together with them, collaborated to create the city's Food Policy Action Plan. And we're one of three groups, including Bountiful Cities and Asheville Greenworks, who contract annually with the city of Asheville to execute deliverables based on that food policy action plan. So food waste reduction is one of those. The neighborhood emergency food preparedness work, which I haven't yet talked about, is one of those. The reparations work was last year's contract. So.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the food preparedness policy activities, because we haven't talked about that. So maybe use that as an example.
Sure, yeah. So back during the pandemic, the city contracted us to begin working with neighborhoods. And I think the Food Policy Council had already been working within certain neighborhoods, marginalized neighborhoods in Asheville, to establish possibility of doing neighborhood emergency food preparedness. So the city started contracting with us during the pandemic to really actively start addressing that. And so we've worked with East End Valley Street community and also the Deverview Housing Authority community, and they're both working on their own neighborhood emergency food plans, which is awesome. We also do these outdoor pantries, which allow people to access food at any time. You can come to this pantry in the middle of the night and grab food if you need it or whatever. And those are maintained by the communities. We just help with funding to build them and install them and support them.
So where are those? Like, explain how that works.
There's one at East End Valley Street right in front of the St. James AME Church. There's one in Shiloh at the Shiloh Community Garden. There's one at Deverview in the Housing Authority community there in Deverview. And how that works is a mutual aid type of thing, and community members can contribute food or diapers or hygiene products, whatever that community needs. People can contribute. Businesses contribute. That's big, huge. We need more businesses to contribute. Churches, and people who need it can just go and grab what they want. And there's no questions asked. You don't have to fill out paperwork. You just get what you need.
When you're advocating for policy, is it just Asheville, or do you partner with other groups across the state?
We're mainly focused in Asheville and Buncombe County, but we also have been one of the founding organizations for the WNC Food Justice Planning Initiative, which is a collaborative initiative among organizations and individual stakeholders in general all over 18 counties of Western North Carolina. So that has been moving along for a couple of years now. We're looking at moving into a 501c3 at this point. We also collaborate statewide with other food policy councils on policy. And I'm about to go to a conference next week in Rocky Mount to collaborate with people from all over the state on policy.
As you do this work, one of the things I've heard you talk about or have seen on your website is this idea of convening kind of spaces. Mm-hmm. So explain how you work to get this work done. It sounds like you have a lot of working groups.
Yeah.
So explain a little bit more about how that functions.
Yeah. So like I said earlier, anybody who identifies as an issue is welcome to step up and come to one of the meetings and say, hey, I want to, or you can just go to our website and there's like a whole like process. It's really simple. You just fill out a little form and say, I want to form a working group.
What's the website again?
It's abfoodpolicy.org.
Abfoodpolicy.org.
Yes, thank you for asking. The working groups meet however often they want to meet. Typically, they meet monthly. From there, a representative from each working group will meet monthly with our policy mobilization hub to report out on what's happening and convene and talk about what we can do to move it forward.
Okay.
That's how it works. It's pretty simple. Yeah.
Are there other groups in the community that folks should be aware of that you partner with and work with on a regular basis?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So Bountiful Cities is our fiscal agent, and we have a lot of members are from that organization who are with the Food Policy Council. That organization actually helped found the Food Policy Council. But we also work with the Racial Justice Coalition. We work with neighborhood associations. Like I told, city and county officials. We have a lot of organizations who are plugged in various ways.
Why do we need your organization? Well, what are the challenges you're solving for?
It's that food access challenge.
Can you give an example or two about how you're trying to influence policy or even identify what policies to impact at a local level?
Yeah, we're trying to identify policies to impact with our neighborhood emergency food preparedness work right now. That's something we've tasked our neighborhood leaders with, is to look at the work you're doing with your neighborhood emergency food preparedness plans and help us identify ways that the city and the county can support what you're doing. Buncombe County Emergency Services has said that they're looking at the work that these neighborhoods are doing to help influence their own broader neighborhood emergency planning.
And when you talk about emergency food preparedness, is there just a lack of food or is there an excess of food? You're doing a couple things. One is you're talking a little bit about there's access to food and not having it. And then there's also the fact that there's waste. It feels like Yes. You could bring those together somehow.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So, yeah, it's all connected. With the neighborhood emergency food preparedness, it's addressing a potential lack of food in a crisis. And that was really lifted up during the pandemic, right, with the supply chain issues. Communities, low-wealth communities, were hardest hit because they lacked the resources to bounce back quickly and to fill in the gaps when the supply chain sort of crumbled. They suffered the most. And so this work is aimed at creating a system to support those communities in situation, and not just the pandemic, but any potential, a natural disaster, anything that would impact their ability to feed themselves and even get water and that kind of stuff. So
what are some of the barriers that your organization has been facing to achieve your goals?
I mean, I guess one of the things is getting the word out, and this is why this show is great, to have an opportunity to talk about what we're doing. I mean, I think probably 3/4 of the people I talk with, when I meet somebody and I tell them I work in food policy, they're like, what is that? What's the food policy? Or I didn't know we had a food policy council here in Asheville. People just don't know.
Do you see certain policies that are working against you and the folks you advocate for? Are there policies in place that are barriers? And then if so, what needs to change?
We are expanding from our pantries to try to help folks get community refrigerators right now. That's a challenge. It's so Byzantine trying to work through the bureaucracy. And so it gets really, really complicated and difficult to proceed. And in the meantime, these neighborhoods need that. They want community refrigerations that would give them access to refrigerated proteins and that kind of thing. But it takes so much time.
Who pays for it? How do you run it? Who maintains the equipment?
The liability. Yeah, it's for us, it's pretty straightforward. We talk with community members. They decide they have a team that wants to work on this. And we find the funding to purchase the equipment and get it installed. And they handle it. But then when you start dealing with county and city permitting and just the general bureaucracy of it, it gets super complicated, as I'm sure you can imagine.
So you would be more the fixed, let's put in a refrigeration capacity someplace.
Yeah, that's actually that refrigeration piece is, we have a grant from Buncombe County, a Buncombe County Tipping Point grant that's specifically to fund that. So, but that's an extension of the neighborhood emergency food preparedness work.
Are there other activities that you're looking to get grant funding for that you could talk about?
Yeah, right now we're seeking funding to support food waste, the food waste work. I've applied for a grant to support the Food Waste Solution Summit, applied to Buncombe County for a Buncombe County grant for that. And just general operating costs, that's always a challenge to find funding to support staffing. We did get a $20,000 grant from the Community Foundation of WNC to help support our neighborhood emergency food preparedness work, which is great because we can offer now through that grant, we can offer some compensation to our neighborhood leaders, which is huge because they put in so much time and now we can support them with a little money to help them out. We need funding for the food waste work, I think, is one of the big areas where we could use funding too. So
What would funding and food waste look like?
Yeah, it could increase capacity. Like right now, I'm doing administrative stuff as part of my job with the Asheville-Buncombe Food Policy Council. But they really, Food Waste Solutions really is get to the point where it needs its own coordinator. And so it would be helpful to have funding to support that position. That's not something we've been able to seek funding. I just haven't had time to really push for that yet.
But one of the things I understand is a lot of the grant work does not pay, specifically does not pay for salaries.
Exactly.
It pays for equipment specific things,
quantifiable things. They want to see, they want to see results. Like what can we see that you put this money into something specific, but not necessarily salary. So yeah, that's challenging.
So what would happen if you got this funding? And mm-hmm. I'm going to, you mentioned pantries mm-hmm. and refrigeration. So if there was more funding, how do you see those kinds of things working together? What would the kind of the outcomes be?
Well, at this point, we have, with the pantries in particular and the neighborhood emergency food preparedness planning, we've sort of been acting, it's been like a program. And the Food Policy Council doesn't really do programming. We're not set up for that. But we kind of started rolling that way so we could see how it would look. But at this point, we need to start focusing on the policy aspect of it more. And this maybe needs to become, it maybe needs to live with a different entity, maybe with the city, for example, or another organization that wants to do this as a program to support this work in these communities.
So I want to go back to food waste, and I only want to go back there because I know that for the last couple of weeks, we've talked about food waste. We've talked about food and
making sure April upcoming is Food Waste Month.
April is Food Waste Month.
Yep.
And so my question is, if you see some challenges in terms of policies that are in the way of eliminating food waste, what would those be?
So that's such a great question. Food waste reduction is such a big, to really affect change in food waste here in Buncombe County, we're going to have a really strong policy platform, and there's going to have to be major, major infrastructure for that. That really is going to require a really close relationship with Buncombe County to focus on that and make it a priority.
So what kinds of infrastructure are you talking about?
So, for example, I know that the county had been looking at the idea of doing some food scrap pickup sites, like rural pickup sites, and I think they did some focus groups on that and that kind of thing. And I think ultimately they've decided maybe not to go that way because community members would have to pay a little extra, and they didn't like the idea of having that additional cost. I mean, that's something that there would have to be food scrap drop-off. So there would have to be a way to process those food scraps and turn it into compost and then to distribute the compost. Asheville and Buncombe County have actually partnered to do some food scrap drop-offs, public food scrap drop-offs. I think there are 4 or 5 sites now, and you can look on Buncombe County or City of Asheville website to find out where those sites are and how you can be a part of that. But I think if we really wanted to start tackling food waste in a big way, it would have to be a much more widespread effort.
Also, you want to get it before it gets to the compost.
Yeah,
okay, that was my question. But I know we're talking about composting. That's great, but that's the other end of it. That's past the point of use.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about policy that would make food more usable so it's not doesn't get to that point.
We're not really looking at that. Right. Compost is like the low-hanging fruit, right? And so that's what we've been, because people can wrap their heads around that. There are cities who have actually, like, you're not allowed to throw food in the trash in some places. Like, that would be a major policy change.
How would that help? Explain to people how that would help.
Well, there's a couple of parts of this. So when you're throwing food in the trash, you're not finding other ways to use it. There needs to be education to that. People need to understand what food waste is and how they can change their habits so they don't waste food. But when you throw food in the garbage, it's not going into compost, so it's not going to be used as fertilizer to create more food, but also it's going in the landfill, and that creates methane, which is like a massive problem for the whole planet, not just for Buncombe County.
What's really helpful about what you're saying is here's the negative impact of wasting food. What's the step before that? So you put a light bulb in people's head that says, before I throw this away and I send it to the trash where it can create methane gas and it's gone for good, can't be used for fertilizer. Even before I compost, what are my options?
just use your food scraps.
Explain that. Like, yeah. How?
So there are lots of ways to use things that we normally would throw in the garbage, like your chicken bones, for example. So you can freeze all your bones, and like when you peel your carrots and stuff, if you're not composting that stuff, you can turn it into food before you compost it. Freeze it and then make a stock with it, and it makes the most amazing soup stock.
Is any of your work related to helping to educate people about mm-hmm. making meals?
Yeah, that's a big part of what the Food Waste Solutions Group does. We have an education working group that's mm-hmm. devoted specifically to that. So we have social media. We have a food waste hero, and you're a food waste hero as an individual habanero because you are saving your bones and making stock out of them. But we have a food waste hero campaign where we identify businesses that are doing a really great job of reducing food waste. And that's part of the Food Waste Reduction Month. Idea is to have a whole month where we're just showing folks what they can
do. So let's just say that I'm excited now and I want to learn more ways that I can help with this. You know, you've talked a couple times about the social media or the different things that are going on next month in April for Food Waste Month. You know, how can people plug into that? Where would they find your social media, et cetera?
Yeah, so you can start at wncfoodwaste.org. That's the website. And there's a lot, we have a blog, we have a lot of information on there. Recipes and some really good tips for reducing food waste. And you can follow us on social media at WNC Food Waste. We do Instagram, Facebook. Okay. Yeah. It's about forming new habits as far as individual food waste reduction, is learning how to deal with your food in a different way.
Speaking of that, dealing with food in a different way, let's talk a minute about some of the challenges that you might see in emergency preparedness or mm-hmm. food kind of crisis. How do folks need to think about your work in that area?
It's so much rooted in the community and people having relationships with each other and getting organized and focused on that idea of what do we need to do if things aren't going well. Forming a communication network. That's one of the things that these neighborhoods have been looking at in creating their plans, is how do we communicate with each other? One neighborhood is looking at the idea of doing block captains. So there's one person on each block or co-captains who are in charge of letting everybody know what's happening. Also getting organized as far as where are we going to store, if we're going to have like a store of food for 2 or 3 days or whatever in case of an emergency, where is that going to be? Where are we going to get the food? Specific things to look at.
Does there have to be an emergency to do this kind of thing in some
no.
of these communities, though?
to implement a plan for feeding everyone?
Well, we started the conversation with urban renewal and pushing mm. and people being pushed out, and that kind of set the stage for if there's an impact of something like a pandemic, mm-hmm. there's an emergency, but the foundational issue is still the same, mm-hmm. which is they no longer can make their own food. So my question then is, do you really need an emergency to want to fix this problem?
No, and communities can come together, neighborhoods can come together and create just a general food plan. I mean, that can be as simple as we want to do a community garden, or you know, we want to pool our resources and have a seed library for our community, you know. So
are some of these places food deserts?
Oh yeah. And like that term is sometimes, some people are not so keen on using that term anymore. The term food apartheid is becoming more used in some circles because the food desert idea denotes like it's a naturally occurring situation. And food apartheid really calls out the idea that these communities are food insecure because of policy.
So let's go back to that policy. Mm-hmm. What is the policy that's keeping them food insecure?
That's keeping them food insecure.
Right, because if you were going to say apartheid, there's intent. Yeah. And so I want to understand, help people understand, what's the policy that is, what's the system that is ensuring that there's food insecurity? Because I'm agreeing with you. I'm fine with food apartheid. I'm get the food desert may not be accurate. But then there's a rule or something that's ensuring that there is food insecurity. And what is that?
Well, like for the housing authority communities, for example, like they can't just decide they want to have a community garden. Like there's a whole bunch of hoops they have to jump through to put a garden in their neighborhood, and with the city or, you know, with housing authority. And these folks are working hard and they have very few resources and they don't have time to do all that. So people feel kind of stuck because of that, you know. Also,
Well, it sounds like what you're saying is the system is so complex and hard to change.
Yeah.
It's become the system itself is the problem. It's a person or a group that's keeping it this way. It's that the system itself has too many rules, too many hoops, too much bureaucracy.
I think that's my sense of what's going on is it's systemic. Government entities give lip service to the idea that they want to help change things, but really putting that into action, it's challenging. It's really challenging to get them to provide funding to support that kind of work. And, you know, a lot of these communities have long histories of working with city and county government that's just like a trail of broken promises. And so there's a lot of distrust about when the city makes a promise that they're going to do something, community members are like, sure. So, I mean, we've encountered that with our food preparedness work. Some people, there's leadership who's really into it and really want to make a difference, but when they try to engage community members in the work, a lot of people are like, yeah, we don't believe that. Nothing's going to come of that. The Food Policy Council's working with the city or working with the county or whatever, you know, they're just not going to deliver. So I understand that, but it's a huge obstacle.
I think another thing is if you're a business, you are going to want to maximize your profits. You are going to want to do all kinds of studies to see where's the best place for me to put a food outlet. And those communities might fall into the apartheid realm because I decide as a business owner, I'm not going to make enough money in that area. Or there's a whole host of things that probably come into play. But that's why maybe you don't have places for people to shop.
Thank you for lifting that up, Habanero, because that is a really big thing for sure. Businesses, if they don't see profits, you know, in one neighborhood, they're not going to invest in it. And that's just the sad truth.
How can folks think about reframing that conversation? Sure, it goes right into capitalism. The food policy perspective on the pros and cons of capitalism.
I think if there was some support for businesses to invest in these communities and encouragement. If municipalities were offering some incentive, you know,
right,
for then I think that would be a massive help to revitalizing some areas that have just fallen into decay, some of them because of urban renewal policies. I think that would be a big step.
Does it feel like business and government are working together to ensure that food insecurity remains?
I don't know that they're actively collaborating with each other, but I think those two forces, capitalism and just the system is creating a situation that is almost impossible for some communities to crawl out of as far as food insecurity. It's just a lot of challenges. And I don't want to frame it like these neighborhoods, these communities are helpless. They are not. There is so much power and energy and strength in these communities. People are doing an incredible job of taking care of themselves. But it's just sad that they have to do that when there could be so much support coming from the business sector and the government. So,
how can folks think about changing some of those things? Mm-hmm. And when they hear about food policy and food preparedness, how can they think about impacting policy at the government level?
Well, I mean, the first thing I can suggest is to get involved with the Food Policy Council. It doesn't take a huge investment of time. And we actually now have grant funding that can support community members who want to be involved in this work, in attending meetings or whatever. There's a little bit of compensation available for your time. So, because we're hoping to engage more members of the communities that we're working with, because right now we have a lot of nonprofits represented in our council,
right,
and it would be great to have more individuals be able to do it. But it's hard when you're working and, you know, doing life to spend
right.
the time.
Well, and that's one of the things that the show is kind of designed to help people do, is mm-hmm. that we understand that people are busy. It's like a premise of everything we think about. The little things that you would say to someone who can do, what would that be?
Yeah. You mean like on a day-to-day basis? Like, I think just paying attention is a big thing. And keeping in touch with what's going on in your community, being part of your community neighborhood association. I mean, even if you can't go to all the meetings, just kind of keep up with what they're doing on Facebook or whatever. I think that's very helpful for staying in tune with things. And, you know, if the media could be more helpful too. I will say this because there's not a ton of coverage of this kind of stuff. It's not sexy. It doesn't make a sexy story to talk about food waste. Until they do love reporting on food waste. The Taste It, Don't Waste It event has been great because they love to cover events like that. But there's not a lot of coverage of just like the day to day.
What would those stories be like? What would they be about?
Yeah, I think taking a look at what some of these community members are doing with their neighborhood emergency food preparedness plans, for example, that would be, I mean, that's a great story. They've put a ton of work into that.
Well, I am curious about the emergency, the nature of the emergency when it feels a little bit like there's an emergency already.
Mm.
Like they're already under stress. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show that whether it's a pandemic or whether it's inflation, those are both emergencies
mm-hmm.
to a degree on people who can't necessarily afford food.
Yeah, so you're talking about like a general food plan for, and that's something, I mean, maybe we need to look at the idea of doing like a general food plan for communities instead of just looking at emergency situations.
The whole idea of there being food waste and there being food insecurity seems like, gee, let's work together to close that gap.
Yeah.
And if the issue is happening in food insecure areas, that means it's very, very localized.
Yes.
It just seems like it's one thing. It's not just an emergency or just a food apartheid situation. It's how do we mobilize folks to get people in an area that faces food apartheid. We'll probably start using that term now.
Yeah, so yeah, there are individual organizations that are super focused on that, like Food Connection. That's mm-hmm. what they do, is they rescue food from that's would be thrown away and they deliver it directly to the people
right.
who need it. So I think like expanding that model, expanding it to involve the whole community in different areas of the community. So we're moving food that could be just tossed away and moving it into the hands of the people who need it and doing that in a really coordinated way. But that's, I mean, we're not there yet. But
right, but we're talking about it. And hopefully there's people who are listening about it and they can go, oh, maybe we could all work together to do something like that.
So if somebody wanted to do that, let's just say, I want to figure out a way where I can either contribute my food waste or just make a off-the-cuff contribution. Is there a list or is there a place to go to see where places are that you could, you know, donate or drop off or do you really need to have you need to connect with somebody and have a coordination?
So, I mean, if individuals are interested in finding out more about that, again, I'll refer you to the WNCfoodwaste.org website because there's a list of our partners who do that work and exactly where they work, you know, whether they're working in composting or food rescue or whatever. That's a really great place to see what's out there and how you can get involved with that. And our website, abfoodpolicy.org, has some resources. And again, we need to tackle this problem of food insecurity and supporting our food system, creating a vibrant food system. We need people. We need energy. We need ideas. And we need people to, again, it doesn't have to be a huge investment of time. Just contact us. I encourage you to reach out. Get in touch with me through the website or WNC Food Waste Solutions and see what you can do and share your ideas and share your energy. And that's how we change things.
For the last 3 weeks, we've had conversations about food. And they've really been great. But they all point to one thing, which is there needs to be a collective movement to get people food who don't have access to food. And I think it's a fantastic movement. There's just a lot of people trying to work on it. And I don't know who the convener is, but it's something that seems like is worth doing, and it could have a huge impact. There certainly seems to be a lot of momentum related to food insecurity and trying to figure it out and solve it.
Yeah.
We're going to have to run. Gina, any closing comments, suggestions?
Get involved. Don't be afraid to reach out through abfoodpolicy.org or wncfoodwaste.org, and we can see how you can plug in with us. Thank you.
You can check out all of our shows, Solutions for the Underaffiliated, at www.underaffiliated.com. It's for folks who are frustrated. We're focusing on positive solutions, and it brings it all together. And check it out, www.underaffiliated.com. Thank you very much, and have a great day.